We need the income to remove the financial stress. Financial stress is attributed to 1 in 2 suicides, to 1 in 2 military divorces, higher than it is for a civilian population. And most of us believe we're going to be going to war at some point in the next three to five years. When you add it all up, it's simple. We can improve the lives of everyone in uniform. We can protect the force. We can reduce suicides. We can save marriages, save families. If we just improve our financial education, learn how to budget, learn how to save, and make a few hard choices instead of taking the traditional or the old school way. You know, it's not the 1950s anymore, right? One income just doesn't hack it. It's not the 1980s anymore. One income doesn't hack it. One income has not hacked it in America for at least 2 generations, right? Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. The show must go on. Here we are back with another week. This is episode 33 of the Service and Wealth podcast. We're past what sort of was like considered success in terms of number of episodes. We're 2/3 of the way to the benchmark of 50 episodes, at which point I'm like, how does anybody keep talking about something for more than 50 episodes of any podcast? Even though, of course, there's stuff like the Bigger Pockets Money podcast, which I've listened to like, 190 episodes of those, and we're 1/3 of the way towards sort of like the, you don't really get any prizes for having 100 episodes of a podcast if you have fewer than 100 listeners, but that's all right. We're going to just keep going because the whole purpose of this brand and this channel, my passion project in life is to get information out there to help with everyone's financial education, everyone in the military. You know, we've cited it a few times. We've got 2 million people in uniform between active duty, guard, and reserves. It's split about half and half between active duty and non. And then we've got millions more veterans. And the fact is that even if you weren't in the military, even if you didn't leave home at age 18 and go into a warfighting organization that's really focused on being the military and not necessarily other things, such as like teaching you how to be an investor, teaching you how to become a homeowner, teaching you how to budget, teaching you how to, you know, deal with debt, et cetera. You know, we just gloss over that if we even try to talk about it at all. But you'd still be at a disadvantage. The reality is that if you don't grow up in an upper-class household, a household that's in at least the top 10%, if not higher, in terms of income and wealth, which is by income, to be in the top 10%, your household income needs to be about $220,000 a year. So you basically would need to have like, if 2 O6s are married, like they're top 10%, but that's about it. I guess 2 O5s could, if they're married, dual income, double BAH, they'd be up there. But there's not a lot of people in the military who can fit in that category, earn their way into that category. But what really matters is if you were raised in that household with that category, because wealthy families teach their kids stuff about money that middle class and lower class families don't teach their kids. Now, I saw an interesting survey recently, and I couldn't remember where I saw it or how to exactly. So, and then I tried to Google it, and I couldn't pull it up. But it was a breakdown of, actually, now I just remembered, now I'm talking about it. It was on a podcast. And the podcast was interviewing a military veteran. And this guy was saying, they're specifically talking about, like, budgeting and some typical stuff. So it was like kind of bigger pockets finance with a military slant, kind of like stuff that we do and we talk about. And they brought up that the military, everybody thinks people in the military are predominantly from the lower class and using it as a level up. But the reality is that when you break it down by statistics, the lower one-fifth and even the lower one-third of the income brackets in the U.S. are underrepresented. So in other words, if you're in the bottom 30% of incomes in the United States, which would mean your household income falls somewhere below $50,000, you would expect 30% of the military to come from those kind of households. But instead, it's less than 20%. And on the flip side, if you look at the top 20% of households by income, so again, now we're looking at somewhere in the order of like $150,000 per year or more as household income, top 20%, one in five Americans, you would expect, just all things being equal, that one in five service members would come from that top, what's called a quintile, right? The top 20%, it's called a quintile because it's one-fifth. So you'd expect 20% of the military to come from that background. But it's over 25, it's almost 30%. So it's almost kind of like flipped that we have more people from upper middle class, upper class, and middle class in the military than we have from the working class or the lower class, which is, you know, it kind of throws people's biases to the wind. And at the same time, so, you know, the argument would be then like, oh, people should be coming in the military, should like do better financially. They should have more wealth. They should know what they're doing. But again, it doesn't play out. And that's because you've really got to be in like the top, maybe top 10%, but definitely the top 1% or 5% of households to be brought up and be taught what it means to budget, to smartly use debt, to avoid bad debt, how to build assets, how to protect assets, how to generate income from things that you buy, how to manage investments, how to set up your own hedge strategies, like all the things that we're, over the months, you know, we're touching on here, we're touching on the, you know, in the blog. And then we especially address a lot of these things in our book, Service and Wealth, which you just head over to Amazon and Google Service and Wealth under the, you know, either the Kindle store, or you can purchase it paperback and have that sent out to you. In which we talk about like the 10 money habits that the wealthy use that you can start using today in while you're in the military. Everything from how to do backdoor Roth conversions, how to acquire assets, how to properly protect your assets once you have them, how to generate other forms of income, all the things you need to do to really level up. And, you know, if you're not in that top like 1%, 5%, maybe 10%, which is like most of us, obviously, you're not getting the education. And that really plays itself out in terms of the beliefs of American military families and service members about their financial well-being and about their prospects. But it's the thing that's really troubling is that it's actually worse. Like, despite the fact that in the military, more people come from the middle class and upper middle class than in the regular U.S. population, we do worse when it comes to our financial IQ. In fact, back in the end of 2022, Millennium Cohort did a, or I'm sorry, not Millennium Cohort. It doesn't matter. It's one of those financial services for the military. They did a survey, and they sent out these questionnaires, and there were like 50 questionnaires to civilian families. And the key is it had to be a family. So it had to be two adults in a relationship, and they didn't have to have kids, but you couldn't be single. And then they cut off the age. So you couldn't be like 18 and be a civilian. You couldn't be a private. And so what they did is they looked at people, Americans 25 and up, and then they also surveyed Americans in the military, 25 and older, and they had to be at least E5, and they had to be married. And then they took, across these thousands of tests they sent out, they took the scores. And in the civilian world, the average score was a 69%, which is a D, right? A D+. Maybe you get rounded up to a C-. It's not good. But the average score for the military families was 57%, which is failing. Like, it's basically a coin toss. Like, they get asked a question of, like, you know, if you say $500 a month, how long will it take you to make a $10,000 down payment? Or, you know, $10,000 closing costs to buy a house? And, you know, they're like, I don't know. Right. Look, as a retired Marine, I understand. We call it math for Marines. We understand maths are hard. And usually, like, when somebody asks a Marine a math question, they kind of stare blankly at you and then start eating crayons. So I get it. Like, math isn't something that we're all good at, but you have a smartphone, which is a supercomputer in your pocket. It can do the math for you. Like, none of this should be that hard. But the problem is that, you know, basically, the military, we are less financially literate than the average American, despite coming from a solid middle-class background. And that really plays itself out in some really frustrating ways. And what do I mean by that? Well, just a couple weeks ago, Blue Star Families, which is the nation's largest military and veteran family support organization, published its 15th consecutive military lifestyle survey, military family lifestyle survey, which they go out and they send these questionnaires out to thousands and thousands of military families, and they get the results back and they look at it. And what they really want to know about is, like, how are military families doing? Now, if you're single right now, you might think, like, this doesn't apply to me. Like, oh, it's a family survey. Like, that's totally different. As a guy who was single for, like, the majority of my military career and was very dead set on staying that way, you can't control your future, right? And sometimes, like, life just happens, and the next thing you know, you've got a family, all right? And it'll be a good thing when it does happen. But the point is that even if you're single now, it's worth paying attention to this, because probably the problems that the families are identifying are similar problems you're facing, and if not now, in the future. And so what did we find out from this survey? Well, junior enlisted families, only 36% feel financially stable. Of all active duty families, only 62% of them feel financially stable. Well, across the broader civilian population, it's nearly 75%, which means we feel a lot less financially stable than the average person. In just the past 4 years, housing costs have outstripped BAH. You know, we've mentioned housing costs are going up at like 5 to 10% per year. Meanwhile, BAH is going up by the index it's required to follow through the National Defense Authorization Act, which has been less than 5%. And so in 2020, 42% of families said BAH covered all their housing costs. In 2024, only 1 in 4, 25% said that BAH covered all their family housing costs. 54% of military spouses said that one of the major concerns they had was unemployment or continuity of employment, right? And the proportion of families who say they need two incomes in their house has increased just in 5 years. It's increased from 3 out of 5 to 4 out of 5. So it's a 25% increase. Now, basically 80% of military families say the only way they can get by is if both of the parents, the partners, spouses, whatever you want to call them, are working, which is up. They're needing to spend more on housing than their BAH is covering. They're feeling less financially secure. And so it begs the question, are military families and our service members and veterans, are we facing our own financial crisis that's separate from the rest of America? Is there something really wrong going on? Is there something that is potentially going to, you know, drag down readiness, if that's your concern, or lead to more relationships falling apart or divorces, maybe an increase in attempted suicides, suicidal ideations, or actual suicides carried out that are triggered by financial distress, bankruptcy, You know, their finances are a major contributor to all of those things. Roughly 50% of every marriage that fails and every suicide that occurs, the person or people involved have said the financial problems they were facing were too big to ever get over. And some divorce because of it, and some take their own lives. And it's a tragedy and a real crisis. And so what I wanted to talk about this week is, are we in a crisis and what can we do about it? Now, before we go on, I want to say, of course, everything about our podcast is educational in nature. It's not meant to be legal, financial, or tax advice. If you need some of that, go consult a professional. And when it comes to investing, all investing carries risk. So do your own research, make your own decisions, and then live up with the consequences and learn something if they're not the consequences you want it to. In fact, you know, learn from it no matter what. And then also, you know, as a reminder, if you haven't, please go to our website, www.militarywealthcoach.com. And then you can opt in to get our weekly newsletter, which has direct links to our podcast and blog posts, as well as some inspirational content and motivational quotes or budgeting and saving and investing tips. And you can also sign up for a free coaching session with me, and we'll sit down and talk about whatever you want to talk about. You ask questions. If I don't know, I'll get back to you. Or I can help you come up with your own financial plan, whether that's paying off debt, buying a car, buying your first house, or saving for retirement. All right. So, you know, moving on, I really wanted to find out, like, why we have these survey answers, you know, and what we're really focusing on is we've got a vast majority of military families and folks in the military who say that they don't have enough money, that their income doesn't cover all their expenses, that they're feeling stressed about finances way more at a way higher level than in, you know, in the civilian population. And I was wondering, does that make sense? And why might that be? And so it really, you know, the numbers are out there, and there are some answers that we can track down, and we kind of owe it to ourselves to track them down. You know, for example, military spouses, right? It's a crazy statistic. 40% of military spouses have a college degree. That's compared to less than 30% of civilians. And in fact, 75% of military spouses have already completed some college. Only just more than 50% of non-military or civilian spouses have some sort of college, right? So when we look at a military household, and we have families and spouses saying that one of the biggest concerns they have is the spouse's ability to earn income and get employed, we find that on average, the average military spouse is more qualified, has better, you know, higher education, in theory, a better resume than people in the civilian world. And yet, every year, on average, a military spouse makes $12,000 less than a civilian counterpart. They make less, and they have a lower labor participation rate. Now, what that means, I know we're used to things like unemployed. If you're employed, you're employed. You're participating in the labor force, and you have a job. If you're unemployed, you're trying to get a job. If you're non-participating in the labor force, that means you're not even trying to get a job. And what we find is that when it comes to military families, 76% of spouses are not participating in the labor force. What does that mean? That means that within our military community, within our families, our households, and even with our own minds, we believe that it's too hard, that it's impossible for military spouses to get a job and hold down a job. Oh, well, we're just going to PCS in a year. We're going to PCS in 2 years, or we're going to PCS in 3 years. I'm not even going to try. Like, what's the point? I'll spend 6 months searching for a job, 6 months training, work for a year, and then we're out of there. Poof. And I've heard that, right? Like, it's not just it's not just the statistics that tell us that military spouses who are highly qualified and have the potential to earn a lot of money don't do it. Like they, you know, we've seen it. We've all heard about it. We all know, you know, have friends and they're like, oh yeah, my husband just takes care of the dog and the kid at home, or my husband's like, you know, getting his associate's degree, or my wife is working on her first book. Like, you know, the fact is that a lot has changed over the last 5 years or 10 years, and we as a military need to catch up. All right. One of my best friend's wife's side hustle makes almost as much as he makes. And, you know, that's as an 05. And she started this out with a couple friends, and I think, you know, a couple of her siblings, like a decade ago, 15 years ago, you know, and it's something, it's just making things and selling things online, like using Etsy, using eBay, using Facebook Marketplace. She figured it out. And it gives them so much flexibility and so much freedom to raise their kids, to travel, to follow the PCS orders around without concern. And I think that, you know, one of the big lessons that we have to learn as a community is that it's time to modernize. It's time to get with the flow and catch up with, you know, 2025 and embrace remote work, side hustles, which side hustles don't just have to be online things. They can be, you know, driving for, what's it called, for DoorDash or Uber Eats or something like that, and just making some additional income. And that can make a big difference. You know, as we said, let's just compare. We've got 76% of military spouses who are not participating in the labor force. And we've got, what was that? And 77%. So like the same exact number who consider having two incomes essential, right? And, you know, why is that? Well, I don't know, but my guess here is it's a belief thing. And that kind of makes sense, right? Because generally in the military, we're a bit more conservative. We're a bit more old school. We're a bit more traditional. And so we have these beliefs. You know, the working spouse goes out and like brings in the money, and then the other spouse like takes care of the house and the kids. And that's like a traditional, you know, 1950s era nuclear family. But that just doesn't work anymore. And especially when you look at the cost of housing, which has gone up 150% in the last 35 years. Meanwhile, wages income has only gone up about 45%, you know? And today, just to be the average American household, you've got to bring in $76,000 per year. To be middle class, that just gets you to the bottom edge of middle class, because middle class income is about $76,000 up to about $135,000. There's a few places where it can be a little cheaper, a few places a little bit more expensive or a little bit higher income. But if we just look at the middle point of that, in order to be middle class in 2025 in America, as a household, you need to be making well over $100,000. Now, you don't have to spend a lot of time studying military pay tables to realize that on your own, you're going to have to be, you know, a commissioned officer who's hitting about 6 years of service. So like an 03 going after 6 years, a warrant officer who's got at least 10 to 12 years of service and is like a W3. Or if you're enlisted, you've got to be, you know, basically an E8, at the end of your career to be individually making enough money to be middle class in this country. When you look at the cost of housing, you know, we've already covered it in our last episode when we talked about you're going to need to be making about $80,000 a year in order to follow the rule of 30, which is spending 30% or less of your pre-tax income on housing, which breaks down to $2,000 a month. That's enough to buy you a $250,000 home and pay your utilities. Folks, the problem isn't that things are harder in the military. The problem isn't that we get paid less in the military. When you look at the compensation that we get when you include BAH, when you include other tax-free allowances, when you include the fact we don't have to spend money on healthcare and dental care, the compensation package is super competitive. You know, when you add in the even a young E3 who's living in the barracks and they're making $34,000 a year, their rent's paid for, their utilities are paid for, they get free food, they get free healthcare, they get free dental care. That's at least $25,000 to $30,000 worth of expenses that you're saving every year. So you're really making already like your lifestyle. You can afford like a $60,000 plus lifestyle. You're almost middle class, even as an E3 in the barracks, so long as you don't throw it all away. But the real problem is that, you know, we don't really understand these numbers and we don't understand how to deal with it. And so, and that's because we fail as a community. We're getting a 57% on our financial literacy. When I look at this survey result and I think about the challenges that we face, like, I get it, right? I was there with all of you, and I get that, especially when you get, you know, every 2 or 3 years, you PCS to some podunk town. You know, you might be bouncing from, in the Marine Corps, you might be bouncing from, you know, 29 Palms to, which is in California, if you don't know. You know, to Jacksonville in North Carolina, not Florida. Then maybe you go overseas, right? And overseas, it can be really challenging. But I want to encourage you as an individual is to just not even wait. Start today looking for side hustles that you can do. And a great way to go out and start that is go on to Fiverr. You know, Fiverr, it's F-I-V-E-R-R. Upwork is another one. And these are marketplaces where you can go out there and you can say, hey, for $15 an hour, I will fill in spreadsheets for you. Now, just imagine if you're on a float with, you know, the Navy and the Marine Corps do that all the time. You go out on a ship for like 6-7 months. And once a month, you might get off the boat. And every day, you got PT and you got some other stuff. But there's like hours and hours in which you're just sitting around doing nothing. And most of the Marines I know, they would bring like their PlayStation. And they'd play video games all day. And that's fun, man. But if you're going to be in front of a screen for like 5 or 6 hours, bored out of your mind, why not make $100? Like just doing a side gig on Fiverr. And the higher your ratings get, the more money you can charge. And if you can figure that out, then once you get married and you have a spouse, then you can teach them. If you're already married and your spouse is struggling with self-doubt or has been rejected from, you know, from employment because the places that they're applying are looking for someone who will be there, quote unquote, long term, which is, you know, it sounds stupid and it feels stupid to be in a military community and reject qualified applicants because they're only going to be there for 2 or 3 years, right? Like, what are you doing narrowing down your employment pool? So why play that game? Like, get out of that game. Get into the online remote. And especially if you've got some work experience already. So if you've been out of college or you've been working for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years and you've got a resume with actual skills and jobs and referrals and college degrees, you can download an app called Inch. And Inch is an even broader marketplace. And you put your skills out there and you put the number of hours per week that you are available. And then the AI on Inch matches you up with temporary positions from employers all over the world. So there might be, you know, if you're good at social media or you're good at spreadsheets or maybe you're, for a while you were like an elementary or like, you know, school teacher. So you're pretty good reading with English and grammar. You can just put it out there and Inch will match you up. They'll be like, hey, here's a contract that's out for 10 hours a week for the next 8 weeks. They need you to proofread all of these documents for them. And they're paying $50 an hour, right? There are tons of solutions out there. And we just need to start getting this information out within our families and our communities and helping each other so that we don't have these really alarming surveys coming back in which 75% of military families say that they need their spouse to get a job. 75% say they need more money to cover their housing. 75% are saying that, you know, that they don't feel financially stable. It's really bad. But there's something that we can do about it. And if we're in the military, like, we should already have a bias for action and not be sitting around waiting for somebody else to hand us something or figure it out. And the so what? Like, what is the so what here? Now, we've already talked about the fact that just to be an average household in terms of income in 2025, you're going to be needing to make at least $76,000. And so it's going to take a couple years. Whether you're an officer or a warrant with BAH, you're starting out a little bit below that. Enlisted, you know, it's going to take you probably into your second enlistment before you're finally at that level. And you need $80,000 as a bench, sort of like a bottom line, to afford a really solid single-family home these days and keep your housing budget within your means. So there's clearly a need to supplement your income, especially as a family. That can still seem like an impossible task. Even if you figure out five or you figure out inch and you figure out a way to bring in extra income, because then you're faced with other significant challenges, right? And we've got, 40% of families with children say that their children are on wait lists for childcare. Now, I am going to call BS on this for one simple reason. When it comes to statistics, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And to me, this is BS. Why? Because I've been active duty, you know, with a child who needed childcare because my wife was working. I knew tons of people, dozens, who fell into this category because they were talking about the child development centers on base. That was it. They're like, I'm going to get my kid into base childcare and I'm not going to consider other options. What did we do? We just put our child in childcare next to our house, like five blocks away. So instead of having to, like, you know, pick up my kid once I've secured for the day on base and then leave base, I just left base and then picked up my kid on the way home, right? It's mechanically, it's the same thing. The CDC is not, you know, even if it's free, right? What are you going to do if you're not working? You're just going to give your kid to somebody else to watch? You would allegedly be doing that so that you could then, as the partner, the non-military partner, you could then go out and get a job and start earning money. Well, the same applies if you give your kid up for, you know, childcare off base, or you have a sitter, or you have an au pair. You know, once I got out, I met several people, and now that I'm aware of it, I now know several people who are still active duty who got au pairs. And these are people who come and help raise their kids. They stay at the person's house, you know, and you feed them, and then they get a stipend, and it costs them like $500 a month, and then they have this person who's taking care of their kids for them and taking them to school and helping them with homework and, like, doing all this stuff. Very cheap, very convenient options for childcare. And the way to look at it is just a simple trade-off, right? If you could be making $40,000 by working, and childcare is going to cost you $8,000 a year, or an au pair is going to cost you $8,000 a year, don't just sit around and give up that $40,000 because you want to get CDC for free, for those who qualify. Not everybody gets it for free, but, or even if childcare costs $15,000 and you want to get CDC for $7,000, you're thinking to yourself, like, oh, I'm going to save $8,000 on childcare. Oh, I'm going to save, you know, yeah, $8,000 on childcare. But what you're really costing yourself is $32,000 of lost net income. The math makes it simple. And that's the challenge here today, is to put it out there and say, look, there is a path towards financial stability, financial confidence, and eventually financial ability and financial freedom for military families. And it comes from evolving our way of thinking. We know already that to succeed in America and to be middle class in America, if you're a military family, you need two incomes. If you're single in the military, you need a side hustle to be middle class. If you're married, you need two incomes in the household, whether it's two for you or one for each, right? And why does that matter? Well, we've just got to kind of take the big picture here. Look at the amount of wealth that is needed to retire. You're going to need, if you're in uniform right now and you want to retire before age 70, you have to plan for at least 20 years that you'll be alive needing retirement income. At future cost of living, you're going to need $4 to $5 million in net worth to retire. Just to provide enough income for you and your partner and your family to make it for 20 plus years with average cost of living. Not even doing special stuff, not even like getting a yacht and sailing around the world. Because you're going to need $250,000. 50, you know, 30 years into the future, the price of everything will be double. So you're going to need that kind of income in the future, and you're probably not going to get it from Social Security. Now, you have a major leg up in that if you stick around for retirement, you'll get the pension, you get VA disability, and that will make up a big difference in what you need to save. But it's not going to make up all of it. You're still going to need, at that rate, $2 to $3 million of your own savings. Now, to get to that level, you've got to be able to save at least $20,000 a year. The same you spend on housing. You've got to be saving at least $20,000 a year. You should be aiming to save 40% of your total income. I know it's hard to do, especially as housing costs continue to go up. But the numbers don't lie. Like, you can just follow along and do the math on your own. You can use an online retirement planner. You can use all these calculators that are available. We're trying to develop an app that's got one. But the point is, it's not just getting by today. And that's what's left behind in all these surveys. And that's what's left behind when we're talking to our young sailors and airmen and soldiers and Marines and Coast Guardsmen and Guardsmen and reservists and even our veterans. You know, I've mentioned before, like, I have had Marines and sailors come back from their transition readiness seminars the month before they're going to get out and separate from the military. And they're only then learning about how to budget, learning about how much to save for retirement, how to use their thrift savings plan, what stocks and bonds are. You know, we're just massively underserving our community in terms of this financial education, and it's creating a crisis, and the numbers don't lie. And so this should really be a collective call to action here in the military. When 3 out of 4 families are in financial distress, when they 3 out of 4 families can't cover their housing costs, need somebody in the household to get another job, we have to do something. And it's not like the old days where you just like go apply to be a, you know, a checkout person at the local exchange. Take advantage of online opportunities. You know, there's so much talent out there, not just on college degrees. Like, you don't need a college degree to have talent and make money. And you don't need to spend your weekends driving for Uber. You know, one of the best side hustles I've ever seen was one of my younger Marines' wives flipped furniture. She'd get on Facebook Marketplace. She'd go out. She'd find old chairs and tables and dresser drawers, you know, wardrobes, whatever you call those things. Bring them home, sand them down, finish them, paint them. And she'd sell them for 5 or 6 or 10 times as much as she paid for those things. She made a lot of money. And it was a hobby that she enjoyed. Like I said, my best friend's wife, the thing that she does, she super enjoys it. She's super good at it. And she's even become so successful that she's now basically just runs a company. She doesn't have to do any of the mailings and the order taking. She just kind of manages the company and lets others, you know, she's an employer, right? So there's all these things that we can do. And in order to do that, we need to get the education out there. We need to mentor our young service members and our young military families and show them the way. And we're not going to get it from Marine Corps Community Services or Army Community Services or Air Force Community Services, like, because those are all groups that are, you know, whenever you go to it, right, it's like a 65-year-old person who's a retiree or the spouse of a retiree and is just bored, right? Because they retired from the military, they live there, and they're trying to teach you stuff that made sense back in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, but it doesn't apply anymore. The payoff is huge, right? The payoff is huge. Because with the benefits that you enjoy in the military, with tax-free income from BAH, lower tax brackets on everything else, you will make enough during your career to become financially free after 20 years. But if you are failing to set appropriate budgets, if you're failing to bring in enough income to reach your savings goals, then you won't, right? And that's the big problem that we're talking about here. You know, I'd like to address one other, important part of this, which is we'll kind of like transition into our next sort of like chapter of multi-episode features on the podcast, which is budgeting. When I look at these statistics, and 26% of active duty families say that their monthly housing costs are covered by BAH, like I'm not surprised. In fact, that's kind of higher than I would have expected. And you know why that is? Because nobody's got any sort of ability or knowledge to put together a good housing budget and plan. Like we just talked about, you know, this week and last week, the rule of 30. Smart budgeting does not allow your housing costs to go over 30% of your pre-tax income. When you have $80,000 pre-tax income, say you're like an O2 with BAH, or like an E6, BAH, or whatever, you can qualify with a lender, with a bank, for a debt-to-income ratio of up to 43%. And that comes from, you know, federal law, post-housing crisis. They say you can't lend to someone putting their debt-to-income ratio over 0.43. So assuming you don't have any other debts and that's all you have, you can qualify for 0.43. Of your income. And that's going to work out to about $35,000 a year or about $3,000 a month. So if you go out and buy a house and you're not in control of your finances, you're not in control of your destiny, and you're not in control of your team, and you don't have the education and the plan, your agent's going to say, hey, let me get you in touch with my loan officer. We'll see what we can get you qualified for. I assume you want to use a VA loan. You're like, yep, zero down VA loan. Here's all our paperwork. They put it in. They're like, oh my gosh, you're going to qualify for, what would that be? That would be, you qualify for about $400,000. And so now your agent's going to take you around shopping for $400,000 homes. And they're going to be pretty because they're all new builds with, albeit cheap, but stainless steel, you know, appliances, like a rain shower, granite countertops, painted, you know, color match cabinets, LVP flooring or LVT, whichever you want to call it. It's going to look really nice. You're like, oh my gosh, this house is beautiful. It's everything I want. And you're going to go out and because the loan officer is qualified to you for $400,000, you're going to buy the house and you're going to inherit this $3,000 a month mortgage payment and your $2,200 a month BAH. And now you're right in this problem. You put yourself in this problem because you didn't have a plan or a budget. You didn't say, I need to start with my monthly cash flow, which is 30% of my pre-tax income. So if I make $80,000, I can't spend more than $24,000 a year, which is $2,000 a month. Then you go online to like calculator.net or mortgagecalculator.org or whatever, and you play around with the numbers until you find a mortgage that's less than $2,000, ideally $1,800. So you still have $200 from that BAH to go and from your rule of 30 budget to pay your utilities. And you'll find you really should only be buying a house that's $240,000 or $250,000. Well, how do you do that then? When you come to your agent and they do that, you say, I'm not doing that. I'll get the pre-qual. We can get the pre-call letter, but this is the budget. If you show me anything over $250,000, I'm going to find a new agent. And if they do, if they're like, hey, this one's $300, I know it's out of your price range, you just say like, you know what? I told you. I'm not going to tell you again. Goodbye. Jump on Zillow. Find another agent. It's super easy. All right? So if we start, this is, you know, we have a mission now. If you're in uniform, if you're on active duty, you've got a mission. If you're retired, if you're separated, if you're a veteran, you have a mission. And that's to mentor and teach about personal and family finances, everybody coming up through the ranks, to explain how to use, you know, the military 40-40-20 rule to set up a budget for how much you should be saving, how much you can spend, how much, you know, you plan for taxes, but then fortunately you're going to get some back, right? Which we've explained elsewhere, we'll touch again. You know, the rule of 30 for planning how much to spend on housing. Like, teach these things. If you need help, that's what this whole channel is about. That's what the whole brand is about. We've got the tips and the techniques and the, I should say, TTPs and SOPs, right, in our Service and Wealth book, here on the podcast, on the blog. And share this with members of our community. Get the education out there so we can turn this around. We can't have 3 out of 4 military families suffering financially. You know, the closing statistic, the last question that they asked, or set of questions, was on the outlook that we have on the future of America. 5 out of every 6 people in the military is expecting us to go to war in the next 3 to 5 years. If you've got that you need to, you know, that you're facing in your future for you and your family, you don't need to add to it the fact that you can't make ends meet with your budget, the fact you're spending too much on a mortgage. Let's take that stress out of the equation so we can get back to focusing on what really matters, which is taking care of the person in uniform to the left and right of us, mentoring our juniors, and accomplishing the mission. Now, this week's episode was a little bit of a, you know, what would be called like extemporaneous, or I was just reading these headlines and it just really got my blood pumping, really got me stressed out and frustrated about the situation we're in, and made me think about everything from financial difficulty to, you know, which is higher in the military. Labor force participation by our spouses is lower, right? Because we don't believe, or we've gotten frustrated and we don't know where to look for better opportunities and options for jobs. We're not making smart choices about childcare. We're trying to hold out for months and months at a time to get a cheap or free option with the CDC. And like we said, I don't care if it was going to cost you $20,000 to go elsewhere. If you're giving up $40,000 in income just to save $20,000 on childcare, you're actually losing out on $20,000, right? You're $20,000 poorer because you refused to ask your husband or wife to go to work while you're serving in uniform. We need the income to remove the financial stress. Financial stress is attributed to 1 in 2 suicides, to 1 in 2 military divorces, higher than it is for a civilian population. And most of us believe we're going to be going to war at some point in the next 3 to 5 years. When you add it all up, it's simple. We can improve the lives of everyone in uniform. We can protect the force. We can reduce suicides. We can save marriages, save families, if we just improve our financial education, learn how to budget, learn how to save, and make a few hard choices instead of taking the traditional or the old school way. You know, it's not the 1950s anymore, right? One income just doesn't hack it. It's not the 1980s anymore. One income doesn't hack it. One income has not hacked it in America for at least 2 generations, right? Not since Gen X, at the best. They're probably the last ones who could even entertain it, but probably couldn't manage it. Millennials, as a millennial, I got to tell you, there's no way to make it without 2 incomes. And if you're Gen Z or Gen Alpha, like, it's only going to get harder, guys. I said this was going to transition into our next series, and that's going to be introducing our budgeting system that we developed here at the Military Wealth Coach. It's called the iCash system. If you've been a faithful reader of our blog or a listener to the podcast, we've mentioned it before. We get into it a little bit in our book, Service and Wealth. It's a different way of budgeting. And just as like a bit of a teaser for next week when we break down what budgeting is and what budgeting should do for you. You know, usually what happens when it comes to saving is you get these savings tips. And I remember hearing them at all ranks when I was going to annual training, and we would have somebody from like the command financial specialist come in and give a class on budgeting. They'd be like, hey, start simple. Do something achievable. Like, I'm going to save $100 a month. That's only $25 a week. That's only one night out with your friends, right? So what? Why are you doing it? What's the point? Why are you saving $100 a month? Do you have a goal? Is there an aim for it? What's the purpose? Budgeting is not A to Z. Budgeting is like military planning process, which is Z to A. You figure the objective, orient on it, and then backwards plan and come up with your mission, all right? And that's what the iCash system is all about. We say identify goals and dreams comes first. If you want to buy a new car in 3 years' time and you know you need $10,000 to do it, or maybe $15,000, which is more than you need for a useful car, reliable car. In fact, when you look at depreciation on cars and the cost of maintenance and stuff, buying a $5,000 car each year for the next 3 years is going to be cheaper than buying a nice car, right, and taking on payments. But if you want to save $10,000 over 3 years and you have a high-yield savings account, well, you just got to figure it out. You got to save like $275 a month for the next 3 years, and you'll end up with at least $10,000 to go buy a car cash, debt-free. If you want to be a homeowner in 3 years, let's say we're going to use a 3.5% FHA loan because that's smart, because everybody can use that once and one time only, and it's a great deal. Well, on a $250,000 house, you know you're going to need about $10,000 in closing costs and about $10,000 down. Let's round it up to $25,000. If you want to do that in 3 years, you got to save about $750 a month. And if you're only telling yourself, well, I can't do it, I need to start small, just $100 a month, when it comes time to decide if you're going to go out and for, you know, wings and beers with your squad mates at the end of the week, or putting that $25 into savings account for something, you're not going to give up the fun. You're just going to go out and do it. And then you'll have no savings. 3 years from now, you'll still have no savings. You'll get out of the military. You'll have no savings. When you follow the traditional budgeting advice, the same advice that our command financial specialists and personal financial managers at the unit level and annual trainings and all that teach you, you're going to end up in the typical spot of every military family, which is that you have $20,000 to $30,000 in combined short-term bad debt. You can't qualify for a home loan. Your debt payments are taking away your savings. You have almost zero long-term savings. It's a recipe for disaster. And so what we're really going to do is, you know, after 33 episodes in which we've covered everything from how to plan to use your thrift savings plan to save for retirement and how much that might, you know, require. We talked about, you know, the ripoff, that is the survivor benefit program, and why you should just instead like save money so you can pay for life insurance. We haven't even talked about like the cost of college, but we've talked about housing. We've talked about buying cars with cash, like all these different things you need to save for. The iCash system puts it all in order for you and helps you do it. And so it's about time that we, you know, if you've been listening and taking notes, you're probably at this point where you're like, I don't know how I can afford to do all of these things. One is about all I can manage on my salary. iCash helps you solve that problem. And so when we come back next week, and for the next, you know, iCash has five letters, so maybe that's probably not five episodes, probably like no more than three. We're going to walk through our budgeting system and teach you a better way to budget so that you can start with your dreams and your goals, calculate how much they cost, and then assemble your own personal financial plan so that you can save and achieve them. All right, that's not the total acronym, right? But that's just part of it. So, all right, that does it for this week. We're a little bit shorter, thankfully. This was a little bit of a soapbox episode. But if you're listening to it, I hope that it was a call to action for you, just like I feel it's a you know, reaffirming the call to action I've felt after spending a whole career as a Marine Corps officer, witnessing and listening to the challenges and frustrations and damages that were caused by financial stress amongst our Marines and sailors. If you're, you know, an NCO or above, if you're a leader in the military, then you've also heard about these things. You also know about the stress, and you also know about the concerns that our families and our service members face to their health and well-being. It should be a call to action to just get the word out there. And fortunately, at this point, we've got a great catalog of blog posts and podcasts. So just shoot people over to my website, www.militarywealthcoach.com. They can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, download, subscribe to our weekly podcasts and listen there. And as always, help me out by 5-star review to help us boost up in the search algorithm. And then also every week, find one person who you know in your life who would benefit specifically from this episode and share it with them. All right, well, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week getting into the nitty-gritty of how to set up a personal financial plan, aka budget. But budget sounds restrictive. It sounds like things you can't do. Personal financial plan is about all about the things you can do. And that's why we don't call it a budget. We call it personal financial plan. So thanks again for tuning in. Everybody stay safe out there. Take care of each other. And until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.